Okay, good morning. The city council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
We're here.
Leonard?
Good morning, everybody.
Leonard Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
I'm ready to vote.
Okay, our first item is the communications. Carla, could you please read 722.
Request of Bonnie Tinker to address council regarding city support of a military presence in the Rose Festival Parade.
Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning. And fellow Portlanders. I'm here to tell you why I was arrested on June 9th. Along with Sarah Graham, for stepping in front of a tank in the Rose Festival Parade while holding the sign, "War is not the answer." But first, I want to start by thanking Mayor Tom Potter for his statement in support of our immigrant community after the Immigration and Customs Enforcement raid last week. That is the kind of leadership and courage I expect from our mayor and from our city council. Last November, Portlanders asked for your courage and leadership in calling for an end to the war in Iraq. You responded by passing a resolution calling for the immediate withdrawal of troops and asking that the money our country would save could be used to support the urgent needs of the most vulnerable portions of our population. It is time to go further and challenge not only the loss of life in one particular war, and the domestic services lost because of the billions spent on the war in Iraq. Militarization of our culture and the misuse of the United States military around the globe threaten the very democracy they are supposed to defend. While our rights as a free people are silently sucked away by a deceitful commander-in-chief who leads us into a war of occupation, which serves the needs of international capitalism, our workers cannot earn a living wage. Our educational system deteriorates, health costs soar, and our children see the promise of a middle-class future disappearing. The budget of the United States military now exceeds the combined budget of all other national militaries in the world. Our values as a free and moral people are eroded. You might say that our government has put our money where its mouth is. Might makes right. We all know this is a false value, yet we defer to it without even thinking. How could our city sit by and watch a tank roll through the streets of Portland during Rose Festival as a form of entertainment? How is it that our city council can issue a stirring resolution calling for the immediate withdrawal of troops from Iraq, and 6 months later we greet cruise missile ships at the waterfront and fall in line behind weapons of war parading through our streets? You have shown the courage to stand up to the President of the United States, asking him to withdraw troops from Iraq. You stood up to the FBI and kept our city police as an independent municipal force. And our mayor stood up to the ICE raid, reminding us that valuing families means not tearing them apart. During next year, can't you find the courage to stand up to the Rose Festival Association? Ask them to turn away from the glorification of military might and make our celebration of roses into a celebration of peace. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
723.
Request of Sarah Graham to address council regarding militarization of the Rose Festival.
Morning, if you could please state your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Sarah Graham. First, I must express my gratitude for our mayor's courageous response to the devastation that has torn apart the families of our friends and neighbors in the immigrant community. It's a marvelous thing when our elected representatives take a moral stand against inhumanity, and it's a sad day when they don't. There was a time when this council took a brave stand against the inhumanity of war, but this month you did not speak out against the glorification of war during the centennial Rose Festival celebration, Many of us asked you recently by phone and email to address the increased militarization of the Rose Festival. Those of you who responded through your assistance didn't seem to believe that you had any influence over the Rose Festival or that there was going to be an increased militarization. So I come to speak to you today in hopes that by now you have noticed that indeed there was an increased militarization of the Rose Festival. Even a number of high school marching bands were twirling painted rifles this year instead of batons. Now we have all seen the tank led through our streets by 14 military entries, the marching units and bands, and the troop carrier. All this while four guided missile warships were anchored by the seawall next to the Rose Festival Fun Center. And we have all heard as the military entries marched past the reviewing stand, the announcer jumped back and forth from descriptions of a World War II victory parade to congratulations and thanks to the armed forces fighting in the war for Iraqi freedom. My mother always said, "You're known by the company you keep." Could it be the same with wars? This is the sort of thing advertising and public relations people know, isn't it? Could we make the failed war in Iraq look great by mixing it up with World War II and parades and festivals? Maybe not great, but at least good. And where better to stage such a coup than a city that passed a resolution to stop the war? Our Rose Festival has been used in a propaganda campaign to build support for continuing a failed and unpopular war waged by an administration that has lost nearly all public confidence. In the process, given all the military warships and weapons and forces, our city may well have become a target for terrorists. And worst of all, our children were given the message that war is fun, war is great, war is glorious. Or as the commentator said about the tank, "Wow, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen." Please, for humanity's sake, as the governing body of this city, use your political and moral influence to stop the glorification of war before it starts next year. Let's keep war out of the Rose Festival. Let's celebrate peace. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, since we don't have a consent agenda, we'll move to our time certain, 7:24.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have before us today.
Carla needs to read it first.
Sorry.
Accept report for the Portland Regulation of Lobbying Entities Code.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have a substitute today on to fix the title.
Actually, that's already been done through administratively through the auditor's office.
Excellent. So this is the our continuing work to polish and refine regulations that require the registration and reporting of lobbying activity here in the city of Portland with public officials. And Shoshana is going to give a very brief PowerPoint presentation. We just have a couple of people to testify, and that's the extent of our efforts today.
So today we offer a report that was asked for by council at the end of our six-month review in the fall. Original ordinance directed the Commissioner of Public Utilities, stakeholders, and the auditor to review the ordinance implementation and the effectiveness and to submit a report. When the report was filed last fall, there was the belief by several members of council for an additional report at a six-month interval to determine whether or not there were needs for changes in the reporting requirements. So these are the original areas that the ordinance asked us to review. And as part of this review process, the commissioner and his staff met with interested parties, reviewed enforcement implementation procedures with the city auditor, and reviewed the online reports and a report filed by the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Stakeholders that contributed to this report are Debbie Iona from the League of Women Voters, Chris Smith, a citizen advocate, Len Bergstein from a lobbying firm here in town, Gwen Baldwin from Baldwin Consultants, Janice Thompson from Money and Politics, and members of the City Club, Kristen Green and Wendy Rodmacher-Willis. We really thank all of the members of the stakeholder committee. To date, there have been 54 lobbying entities registered under the ordinance, and the lobbying entities lobby on 10 basic areas of interest. Recommendations that came out of the stakeholder committee are that creating an oversight committee, and this was a thought that there needs to be more analysis to determine whether or not a oversight committee is necessary at this time. The current ordinance is complaint-driven, and there's no real indication that complaints are prohibited or thwarted by the system, so we're just going to do some more analysis to determine whether or not an oversight committee is necessary. Previously, the council directed that the names of lobbyists and lobbying on behalf of lobbying entities be included in the report, and so there's no these changes have been implemented at this time, so there's no necessary recommendation at this time. There is a suggestion that the hourly threshold be reduced or removed. The stakeholder committee was interested in seeing some changes on this front, and this was the original purpose for this additional report. So the recommendation is to reduce to 8 hours the threshold for registration, thinking that this would increase the public's awareness of advocating at City Hall. There's also this suggestion that calendar reporting be made more uniform and can include more detailed information. Currently, calendars posted by all of the directors and the elected officials include varying amounts of information, and there's the hope on the behalf of the stakeholders that more detailed information be included. Currently, when amending a report, currently, when an elected official receives a gift from an unregistered lobbyist, the system does not allow for a specification of the lobbyist's name. And so there's a hope that that information will be included in the reporting system as it goes forward. The auditor's office has indicated that this is a possibility. Additionally, there's been, I don't know why this says amending the report. I'll get back to that. A quarter-time FTE has been added to the staff of ONI to assist the efforts on the part of the neighborhoods to include associations minutes online, and this is going forward, and we continue to support ONI in this effort. For the exemptions, there was the concern that those who are exempted from the requirements, that information is not readily available on the website. So there's the hope that there would be a disclaimer at the top of the report stating who is required by the registration requirements to report. There's the recommendation that the if the threshold requirement is not removed, that the code should just be clarified to state that lobbying entities that spend fewer than 16 hours lobbying during any calendar quarter must report. And this is just to clarify the code language. It's purely administrative. The original draft was somewhat circuitous. For ceremonial events, there was the recommendation that complimentary tickets to ceremonial events be reported and there be a field to indicate whether or not an elected official was a speaker or a mentor or that they were participating in the event for ceremonial purposes. This is thought to clarify any concern about the receipt of gifts.
And just to be clear, the group recommended no change whether you get free tickets for a ceremony or free tickets for whatever else, you still have to report them.
Absolutely. There was the recommendation that many lobbyists don't know, or folks that are meeting with elected officials or directors don't know the requirements. So trying to provide that information in a pamphlet or as the signature line from a scheduler from an elected or a director's office. There was also a recommendation that maybe a sign be posted downstairs at the public entrance, basically stating what the requirements are. So if these are appreciated by council, then I'll draft those into an ordinance. Also, there was the hope on behalf of the stakeholders that one searchable document be created and that the information be provided as easy as possible for the public. The auditor's office has said that this is a possibility and will make this information available in the future. The current code states that no person shall willfully make and subscribe any document which contains or is verified by a written or electronic declaration of false swearing, which the person does not believe to be true. This is a difficult standard to meet, and the city attorney's office has suggested that we add the word reasonable to, so it would be reasonably believe. This is a standard that is much more easily to able to prove or prosecute.
What does that mean, that last one?
Reasonably believe.
It's, I'm reading this paragraph. I have no idea what it means.
The standard put forth in the code asks that if somebody believes the swearing to be true, it basically is stating when you file your report, you have to believe the information to be contained in the report is to the best of your knowledge. And so it's basically affirming the standard to a reasonable belief.
So it's people who, where someone was to complain that an individual intentionally lied, didn't.
It's difficult to prove that in a state of in a court of law.
There's an email chain that said, "We did this, but we're actually going to report something else." That would be an example of this is lawyerese, but that'd be an example of willful lying.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. So in conclusion, the ordinance calls for an additional code review in October of this year, and the commissioner will coordinate this, including a more open forum and opportunities for input from council's office as well as the public on any changes necessary. And hopefully we will make City Hall more accessible, transparent, and inclusive for the public. Thank you.
Questions for Shoshan?
Yeah, one question. I'd like to hear a little more. I mean, I think it's working well, and I appreciate all your. I know this is hard stuff. I want to hear a little more logic on why we should do 8 hours instead of 16. I mean, my personal belief is that I actually don't want to catch the one-time citizen lobbyists in this. I really don't want people who are working an issue and are not professional lobbyists to have to. And I get that it might give some transparency to the public, but frankly, I think the burden on the person who's just working on an issue and suddenly gets to 10 hours on it is not worth what the public's going to learn from having learned that. I mean, I'm not sold on the threshold dropping.
Commissioner Sten, I appreciate that. The thought is that when one is advocating on their own issue, if I was advocating for a matter of my own personal concern, that would not be captured under the ordinance. It's only when I'm advocating on the behalf of a lobbying entity. So if my issue is no longer my issue but for another entity, then I would be required to register under the requirements. The thought is in reducing the registration requirements to 8 hours, it would capture more of the activities. And I believe that the folks that are here to testify will be able to address their concerns a little bit more directly, but that was their representation to my office, to our office.
But let's be clear, that is not being moved forward by what you're considering today. That was the recommendation of the citizen group we brought together, and we've noted that, but we're not actually making that happen today.
Right. We haven't offered an ordinance at this time. I'll be bringing one forward for the administrative changes and any other changes recommended by council today.
Okay. Well, that'd be the area with people testifying that I'm most interested in. The other ones, I think, make sense to me.
Any other questions? Okay.
And did people sign up, or do we have invited testimony, Shoshana, or? Okay.
Go ahead and call the first three.
We have four people signed up. The first three are Carol Cushman, Harvey Thorstad, and Chris Smith.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good. Each state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes. Start with Carol.
Okay. I'm Carol Cushman, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League wholeheartedly supports transparency and openness in government and believes Portland's lobbying ordinance is key to accomplishing that goal. We supported the goal from its inception and participate in it as a registered lobbying entity. It is, however, a work in progress and needs continual monitoring and adjusting. The intent of the program is to capture the behind-the-scenes interactions between decision-makers and the entities seeking to influence them. A review of the quarterly reports shows that under the current rules, some of the city's most influential lobbyists are not required to report their activity. For this reason, the League supports both the registration of all lobbying entities and removing or at least lowering the threshold that triggers reporting. At this point, we do not know what would be sufficient to capture the full extent of lobbying activity. Therefore, we suggest operating under a new threshold and registration requirement for at least 2 quarters and then evaluating the results. We urge the council's eventual approval of these 2 changes, since I hear it's not up for discussion this morning. When I wrote this, we thought it was. Thank
well,
you for
considering
these.
It's certainly up for discussion. It appears to not be up for a vote.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to thank you for your input on this and the League's input on this from the very inception. And it is definitely a work in progress.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Harvey Thorstad, Commander U.S. Navy, retired, Vietnam vet, President of Veterans for Peace Chapter 72 here in Portland. I'm here to speak in support of Mayor Potter in connection with the recent ICE raid at the Del Monte plant and some other areas.
Harvey, we're having testimony on a lobbying ordinance. Your testimony must pertain to that matter.
In which case, let me withdraw my testimony. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Chris.
Good morning. Chris Smith, and while I am a registered lobbyist on behalf of the Portland Streetcar Citizens Advisory Committee, I am speaking today only on my own behalf, not as a representative. Let me first celebrate what I think is some of the success of the system. I think the addition of the lobbyist names to the reports in the last review has been very helpful, making things more apparent. Speaking from personal experience, it was very illuminating to me to read the reports related to lobbying around the Irving Street parking structure. If we had had that kind of transparency in 2003, when I was a neighborhood representative on that issue, I think we would have been much less naive in the way that we worked with council on that issue. So I think we're making progress on that front. I do want to support a number of the changes suggested today. First, an issue that I've been championing is the idea of getting all the contacts into one searchable electronic document so that those of us who like to load things in databases and trend them over time and try and discover deeper patterns of information have an easy way to do that without retyping everything, so I appreciate that. I do support lowering the threshold. I would echo much of what Carol says. I think there's still a lot of stuff flying beneath the radar. You know, 2 prominent examples. I saw nothing on any of the lobbying reports during the period when Warner Pacific was negotiating about Mount Tabor, and apparently we could, you know, get all the way to a memo of understanding draft without triggering a threshold that required reporting. I have seen nothing on lobbying reports about negotiations over the financial contributions to the tram. You would think you'd rack up 16 hours, but apparently that's not a fine enough filter, so I think there's a strong argument to lower the filter. I think there have been some different approaches to that. In an earlier version of this report, an idea that didn't survive into the final report was a test that would apply to people who were representatives of multiple entities and earned a certain portion of their living from being a representative. And that, I understand, got bounced by the city attorney on the basis of the sort of the livelihood test not standing constitutional muster. But I think that you could seriously look at a test that said if someone is a representative for more than one entity, it suggests that they're kind of a different kind of actor in the system, and applying a different threshold, even a zero threshold, to them is appropriate. And I recognize that I'm probably at risk myself of triggering that at some point in the future, but I think that would be a good trade-off to add additional transparency to the system, and I would encourage you to look at that, and I would encourage you to go to 8 hours, because I think there's it still takes a lot of activity to trigger 8 hours in a quarter, so I don't think it's terribly harsh on sort of the everyday citizen activists who might organize collectively around something. I don't think it would pick up a lot of those. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks for being part of this project from the very beginning as well.
Thank you.
Our last person is Gwen Baldwin.
Morning.
Good morning.
Please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Gwen Baldwin, president of Baldwin Consulting, and someone affected by this ordinance. And I've had an opportunity to work within it for the duration of the affected time, as well as for multiple clients. I do appreciate Commissioner Adams and his staff, Shoshana Oppenheim, for being open to hearing about adjustments and refinements to better meet the intent. I was involved in early discussions, and I appreciate that this is a work in progress. And as someone affected by the ordinance, there's a practical piece to it. And in addition to the changes that are listed in the report today, which I have no problem with, I would encourage the auditor's office to confirm reports by entity. As somebody who may put in more than one report in a quarter, sometimes it's only one, sometimes it's none, sometimes it's two, if I get a report, an email confirmation saying thank you for filing, and I don't know whether they've received both or only one, it's confusing. So I would appreciate that refinement. But I want to touch back on the transparency issue because I think it is really important. I have no problem with transparency across the board. I think it's a good thing to open up the window to public development, public working, and I don't have anything to hide. At the same time, I remain concerned and frustrated with the exemptions in the ordinance that aren't necessarily consistently complied within the existing criteria of open meetings and public records laws. Now, some of the exempted organizations may have technical limitations. They may have difficulty putting their meeting minutes up or distributing them. And I know that there's work with ONI to try to deal with that. And I think that's really important. They're trying to comply, and they're just having some technical issues. At the same time, not having that information fails to meet the transparency. I mean, if the point is that you don't want to have people double reporting, but they're not actually sharing that information, or they're in executive session excessively, or, I mean, any number of things that violate the public meetings and open meetings and public record laws, I don't think the public is being served. So I'd really encourage you, as you continue to move forward on this, to look at that. I don't have any trouble with the threshold. I have a great deal of trouble with it being inequally applied. And the ACLU has already had a Oregon Supreme Court decision to that effect. So let's not go there again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gwen. And I want to thank you as well for being with this project from its inception. Appreciate it.
Thank you all for being here today. Thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to testify on the lobbying report? Apparently not. Need further discussion? We need a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Well, I want to thank the council for their support for launching this project and for their consideration today. I want to thank the auditor and Andrew for all their good work with us in helping to fine-tune it and for making it workable online and enforcing it. Very much appreciate that. And all the citizens that help us and hopefully will continue to help us to polish and perfect this. And to Shoshana Oppenheim for her excellent work on this issue. This has been a very busy couple of weeks for her with all of our work on transportation and pull all that off and this off as well. I'm very grateful, Shoshana. Thank you. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I'm pleased to accept this report. I do have some issues, I think, with some of the recommended changes. I think, you know, part of our job here is to encourage an open city hall for our citizens, and the notion of handing citizens a form when they show up at an office for a meeting with me seems to provide, to my mind, a somewhat of a chilling effect. I mean, people are nervous enough coming into city hall to meet with a commissioner or a mayor. I don't want them to sort of be double thinking about, gee, am I doing something wrong? I want them to feel like they're doing something right by coming to City Hall. So that is one issue I have concerns about and probably will not support if it comes forward. Some of the things about schedulers as well, I'm concerned about it for the same reason. But other than that, I'm pleased to accept the report. Aye.
Sten.
I think it's going very well. I appreciate all the hard work. Aye.
Okay. So next item, 725.
Accept Historic Preservation Fund grant of $11,800 to supplement the City Historic Resources Program for the federal fiscal year October 1, 2007 through September 30th, 2008.
Is anybody here? Is anybody signed up to testify on this?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Okay. Please call the roll.
Non-emergency.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. This moves to a second reading. 726.
Amend contract with MCA Architects PC to provide additional architectural and engineering consulting services for the remodel of fire stations 15, 24, and 43.
Anybody signed up to testify?
This is a second reading.
Oh, this is a second reading. Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Okay, the ordinance passes. 727.
Authorize an agreement with Owens Brockway Glass Container, Inc. for receiving easements and $55,000 reimbursement in return for providing a water quality facility by the Northeast 92nd Drive Water Quality Facility, project number 7161.
This is a second reading. Vote only.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Okay. Ordinance passes. 728.
Grant revocable permit to Contemporary Crafts Museum and Gallery to close Northwest 8th Avenue between Everett Street and Coote Street and Northwest Davis Street between Park Avenue and Broadway Avenue from July 20, 2007 to July 22, 2007.
So second reading. Vote only. Please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Okay. Ordinance passes. 729.
That's for Thursday's agenda.
Oh, that's Thursday. Okay, then we are adjourned until Thursday at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
They're already protesting your rule.
They're happy. We're so short. We are now adjourned for the till Thursday.
No, I think they're saying
Saltzman. Saltzman. I think you should go out and address them, Dan.
Yeah. It's your job to address them.